Okay. What is up, ducks? Today we have another episode of the Danny Kim Show, and of course we have a very special guest with us. His name is Matt Koshmerl.
Correct.
Very difficult to pronounce. And he is a film director that has recently made a film about Dokdo, which is a island that's in Korean territory, but Japan is claiming it's their own. It's a disputed territory right now. So please introduce yourself.
Yeah. Matt. Well, thank you. First, thank you for having me. Yeah, like you said, my name is Matt Koshmerl. I've been working on this film about Dokdo, Land of My Father is the name of it, Aburji Uidang, for the last almost 6 years now.
Okay.
And it started when I lived in Daegu from 2009 to 2012. Mm-hmm. And I first became aware of Dokdo during that time. And it was something that I thought was very interesting. I knew very little about the Japanese occupation of Korea. Mm-hmm. And when I left Korea, I returned to the United States and did an MFA in film production. And I started thinking about Dokdo again as a documentary subject after I graduated from that program. So mm-hmm. I came back here for 6 months and shot, and then I've returned a few more times to shoot over the years, and we've been editing for about 4 years now.
4 years?
Yeah.
Is that normal for a documentary film to take that long?
I mean, it depends on the documentary film,
yeah,
obviously. And I think one of the big challenges for me with this film is the fact that I'm not Korean. I'm not Japanese. I don't have a cultural context.
No.
Besides living here for a short period of time. Mm. And so working with my editor, who is Korean, it's taken me, I think, like I've evolved as much as the film has evolved in the last 4 years, and it took me a very long time to narrow in on the story I want to tell through the characters that, that we filmed. Mm-hmm. And for me to really empathize and I think understand a lot more about you know, what the aftermath of the Japanese occupation has meant to at least the subjects in my film. So I think documentary film can take a long time, and I think for this film, the 4 years were necessary for me to be able to really understand that and grow with that.
Mm. So can you, like, explain this film to our viewers?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the film, originally the idea of it was more just kind of a broad view of Dokdo, looking at like this huge institution of the dispute, mm-hmm. What it meant to Korea. I specifically do observational documentary film.
Right.
And so we wanted to follow a bunch of different people whose lives had somehow been affected by the island, or their lives were intertwined with the island. And the film has really shifted. We actually filmed five people when we started filming this in 2014. And now we only have two people in our film. So we kind of narrowed the subjects to these two people who their fathers really have kind of this role in their lives, where both of their fathers have some type of link to Dokdo, one more abstract, I guess. So the two characters are Nobyeong-man, who is a farmer from Namwon.
Right.
And he found out later in his life that his father was a slave during the Japanese occupation. And after he found out about that, whenever he would hear about the issue of Dokdo, he would just, you know, become very angry. You know, he'd feel kind of rage towards
Japan
for claiming the island after what his father had experienced. So he goes to Tokyo and he protests in front of the National Assembly.
I found that very... I have very mixed feelings about it. Like, I really respect that person, but also I found it kind of like funny at times. It has some comedic moments in the movie, but yeah, please go on.
Yeah, I mean, his protests are sensational, for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't seem like it's incredibly effective.
No.
Because there aren't, you know, maybe there's not even people around him. But I think it also is interesting to see how much the Japanese police also, like, suppress his protest in a very, like, passive way. They just, you know, completely enclose his protest. So, like,
cover it up.
People can't even, you know, see him protesting. But yeah, and so the other main character has more of a direct relationship with Dokdo. Her father, her name is Choi Kyung-suk. Her father was one of the first people to live permanently on the island. And after he passed away, the Korean government didn't allow her to return. And we think that's probably because the political issue became a lot greater around that time, and the Korean government wanted to kind of control more who was going to be on the island. And so they decided to have her father's kind of second hand, right-hand man there, Kim Sung-do, be the official resident of the island, and she could no longer return and live there. So in a way, she was kind of also displaced because of the disputed territory, although she was displaced by the Korean government in this place. So she's trying to kind of do two things. She's trying to preserve her father's legacy and get back to the island and live there because that's what he ultimately wanted her to do. And she's struggling to keep it in the family. So her daughter doesn't necessarily want to continue that effort of preserving her father's legacy because she sees that her mother struggles with it.
Right. Which is an interesting part that I found in the movie, like the whole argument scene where the daughter's like, oh, mom, please stop with this Dokdo thing. Like, you know, it's great that you're trying to like preserve your father's legacy, but like we got to live lives, basically, is what she's saying, right? Like, how do you feel about that? Like, what did you make of that specific situation where perhaps the younger generation is a little bit more detached to these issues than people who actually experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a powerful scene. It was one of those scenes where when we were filming it, it was, you knew it was going to probably be in the film.
Were you like, yes, they're fighting?
You know, kind of, yeah. Yeah, like,
I guess if you're like a filmmaker, you kind of have to have that, okay, this is good for
film. You want you do want conflict to some extent, right?
I mean, a movie can't be like so happy.
It also makes me like hungry every time I see that scene too, because all of the food. But there's a lot of really interesting things, you know, in that scene. And I do agree, you know, I think that it's an abstract concept. And on a larger scale too, for the younger generation of Korean people who, you know, with No Byung-man's generation, with Mrs. Choi's generation, you know, No Byung-man remembers his father being a slave, essentially, or heard stories of that. And it does, I think, become more abstract with each generation, more detached. And so I know that in Korea, you know, you hear, you know, there's Dokdo songs, there you see Dokdo flash mobs, stuff like that, and Dokdo Uridang, and
But it's very patriotic about Dokdo.
Yeah, there's patriotism towards it, but it's not like the same kind of connection, I guess, as the older generation, I think. So I think it's interesting, and I'm glad that scene was in there because it does reflect that theme, which is one thing we wanted to explore. I mean, originally, one of the concepts I had for the film was like, how do you memorialize atrocity without indoctrinating hate with like a younger generation? Because it's something that's just being taught, right?
That's what I felt was another thing that I felt was interesting about the film was you don't speak Korean that well, right?
No. 한국말 못해요. 조금 공부했어요.
Well, so like scenes like that where they're having these arguments, how do you realize like, okay, this is what they're saying? Because I feel like that's going to be very, very difficult to know as a filmmaker, like especially a documentary filmmaker, when it's like all mostly on the fly, like, is this going to be on film or not? Like, how do you know that? How do you know like what the situation is?
Sure. Well, I guess there's a few things. I had a wonderful producer, Yi Ga-young, who would like translate for me and give me transcriptions as things were happening. I had also two really good camera operators, and
they were Korean as well.
They were not. No, one was Mexican and one was English. And
how did they figure out like, okay, this needs a
kind
close
of just
up.
Like social cues? And I mean, the cinematography in the film is
amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's really good. And so I think a lot of it is just having experienced, you know, cinematographers And being able to just have that type of intuition. But a lot of it is just the producer we had was, really incredible. Also, with this style of documentary filmmaking, with cinema verite, observational documentary filmmaking, you shoot an incredible amount of film. We shot over 400 hours for this film.
Holy crap.
And then you cut that down to 75 minutes is what we have for the film. And so with all of that footage, you really, you know, one of my favorite filmmakers, Frederick Wiseman, he describes filmmaking similar to like writing a research paper. Mm-hmm. And the research that you do is the production. You go out there and you collect all of this information.
Right.
And then the story really develops in the editing.
Post.
And my editor, Christina Sun Kim, she's fantastic. She's been working on this film with me for 4 years. Mm-hmm. She's gone through 400 hours of footage. And you know, we've been able to develop.
Complaining about like 2 hours of footage, and it's like
that's still a lot. But yeah, so you are able to like develop the story and be very selective of what you choose.
Right, but that's also why it takes 4 years.
That is also why it takes 4 years. Yeah.
So back to the Dokdo thing. Mm-hmm. Why Dokdo? Why did you choose this subject?
Well, so I think Dokdo. It's an interesting. Thing for multiple reasons.
Right.
We made this film for thinking that we want this to be shown in Korea, but we also want this to be played internationally. And I think Dokdo is interesting from a Korean standpoint, since it's kind of like it's the last physical manifestation of the Japanese occupation, and it's really inseparable from the issues of forced labor, the issues of sexual slavery.
Yeah.
These are all kind of like tied together. Yeah. And I think just the physicality of it.
Yeah, it's a symbol.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a very strong symbol. And I think because it is a symbol, internationally there's like a universal universality to that where people can understand, you know, symbols, you know, anywhere. I also think the sensationalism of it is interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, the when you tell someone in the United States that people will travel, you know, 4 hours by ferry to go to Ilungdo, stay there overnight, and then you have to travel another 3 hours to Dokdo, you know, two-thirds of the ships will, or one-third of the ships will have to turn around.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you stay on the island for 15 minutes. And then you have to go back.
Yeah.
There's something very sensational, very interesting about that. And the goal for the film is to take that sensational story and really explain why. You know, what does that mean?
You know what I enjoyed about the film was, I don't know if you got any of these comments. Everybody should check out the film once it's out. Like, probably next year, right?
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. 2020 for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It really reminded me, like watching the film, it really reminded me of reading a Korean novel. I don't know if you got any of those comments. The entire like flow of the story, it's very slow paced in some ways, right? And the conflicts are quite subtle. It's not like a dramatic climax, really, right? And the results are also quite like very subtle, and that kind of reminded me of like Korean novels that were written during the times of colonial rule, because back then there's a lot of Korean novels where it's about like, you know, it's basically like a slice of life version of novels, and they're very subtle. They're very kind of like hopeless in some ways because they had no hope. People didn't have hope then.
Sure.
So they're like, well, this is my life. It's shit, but here it is. And I'm not saying like your movies generally like that, but it had that little pacing where it felt very, very Korean to me, which was, I don't know if you intended that, but it was quite amazing. I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was an intention, but I can totally see why that would be the case, or you can make those connections with these stories.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And also, more questions.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a lot of questions regarding this movie. I heard that you actually got some resistance you face some obstacles along the way of making this movie from the Japanese government as well as the Korean government, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
So what was that about?
Well, so with the Japanese government,
Well, they obviously didn't want that movie made, probably.
Well, I don't, probably not, but yeah. They also, like, the main resistance we got from the Japanese government was just the fact that when we would follow Nobuyeongmon to Tokyo,
right?
I mean, the police would, you know, stifle his protest, but they'd also would kind of like block us from filming. And we were also like, at first we were kind of getting pushed around a little bit.
Yeah.
Nothing too bad.
Yeah.
And also, interestingly enough, we had people following us. So we had government agents that would follow us from the airport everywhere. Well, Nobuyeongmon would have a detail on him all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it more than likely was for his safety. Or like, the Japanese government doesn't want attention drawn to this at all. And so
if somebody from, I guess, like a far right activist in Japan, like physically, you know, hurts this person or something, then it's going to be news in Korea. And then now it's like a whole diplomatic crisis.
Exactly. I mean, it could make international news.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. Right. What about the Korean government?
So with the Korean government, originally, I asked for permission to stay on Dokdo for a few days.
Yeah.
And at first, they said that would be fine. I could stay there on the island. And soon after that, I went had a trip to Ulleung-do just to do some scouting. And when I came back to Gyeongsangbuk-do, I was told from the governor's office that I couldn't go to Dokdo at all. And I would not be able to film there unless I made a film about, it could only be about like specific subjects, like the natural beauty of Dokdo.
So like a promotional film.
Yes.
It can't be political.
I couldn't bring up the dispute at all.
Mm. Why not? Well,
why not? They didn't really answer that. That's a stupid question.
We all know why not.
You know, at the time, I think it was almost a similar thing where.
When was that? When was that?
This was 2014. Okay. 2014. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it was a similar thing where, you know, at the time, and I think it's still the case that, you know, Korea's, the government's claim is that there is no dispute.
Yeah.
It is Korean territory.
Right.
Well, and so
they don't want to say that because they don't want to say it's disputed because we obviously think it's like it's rightfully ours. So it's like it's not even something worth mentioning. Which I guess I understand that position, but also like it's kind of whenever things like that happen where like Korean government or Korean people don't want to admit like these people exist, it really saddens me. I had a similar situation where I made a video about this Hiroshima bomb survivor, atomic bomb survivor, who was Korean. And I don't know if you know, but 30% of the people that died from the atomic bombings or got injured from the atomic bombings were actually Korean people.
No, I didn't know.
Because there were a lot of Korean people that were there for forced labor or for just money reasons, stuff like that. So, but to the traditional narrative of Korean history, you know, the atomic bomb is something that helped the liberation of Korea. So we don't want to paint it a bad picture, that event necessarily. So, I mean, it's a bad thing for humanity. But in the general scheme of things, that helped us, that basically liberated Korea. So,
right.
Korean people don't really want to admit that these people exist, and we don't really talk about it. So what happened in the video was, A, people did not like the fact that I even filmed that video. And B, the person in that video was actually more anti-Korea than anti-Japan because throughout most of his life, the Korean government just, you know, try to push him under a rug and pretend he doesn't exist. Whereas the Japanese government, they had, obviously, they're going to sell the atomic bomb as like, okay, this is like something that was so terrible. It is terrible.
It is,
But they're going to like help these people out because it was a tragedy for their people as well. So he had more support from the Japanese government than the Korean government, which is an uncomfortable truth.
Yeah.
But
But I can understand that resentment you would feel towards your own country for trying to cover up something that's so
so
traumatic.
The Korean people did not like the fact that I made that video.
Yeah.
Which was sad.
Yeah. What was the Korean government's reaction?
Well, they didn't. I'm not like asking for their permission. So obviously, they didn't care. But
sure.
These people, they're not like really, they don't really exist.
Yeah.
For the Korean government. Another example is like, I also made this. I was making this documentary until it had some reasons to be halted, but basically I was making a documentary about dog meat farmers.
Okay.
And I actually felt a similar, it felt really similar. One of the scenes in your movie felt really similar to me when, the male, protagonist, what's his name?
Nobuman.
Yeah, Mr. Roh. He was basically protesting in front of the Japanese embassy in Seoul.
Right.
And then the police were like, oh, don't do that. And they...
Yeah.
Is this a spoiler?
No, it's fine.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. But anyway, and they were like, oh, like, just shut up and just get out of the way. Like, don't cause any fuss. And I had a similar moment like with the dog meat farmers where they don't want these people like causing up a fuss in the middle of Seoul. So these dog meat farmers were protesting, oh, hey, like, you know, help us out to like legitimize dog meat farming, which is something that the Seoul city government and Korean government doesn't want to show to outsiders.
Yeah.
So they basically told them a lie. They promised them, oh, we're going to have this dog meat farm, dog meat festival in the middle. So I could not believe my ears.
Yeah.
Because one of the leaders from that protest, he went up to the city hall and then he got a promise, apparently, or that's what he claimed, saying like, oh, Seoul city government is going to hold a dog meat festival.
I can't see that happening. No.
Obviously, that did not happen.
Right.
And that was just this way of them saying, just shut up and leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's sad to see those like parallels happening from, you know, these people who, you know, the government doesn't want them to exist. And also these other people that are like, you know, please shut up.
Yeah.
Did you like, you said, throughout the 4 years of filming this documentary, you had a change of, I guess, you felt more empathy, maybe?
Yeah.
Or did you feel like you knew more about the subject, right?
I think I knew more about the subject, absolutely, yeah.
So how does that affect the filming process of the documentary or the story, general storyline of the documentary? Because obviously that would mean that earlier in the film, you have a different stance compared to where you finish the film.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the start of the film, I had a little more of a cynical view. And I also think part of it is because I started the film when I was 25 and now I'm 32.
Okay.
So I'm just like less cynical in general.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you'd be the opposite.
No. I feel like I've grown in a good way.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going the opposite way. But
well, you should come back this way. But yeah, so I think that, you know, when I started, I was interested in part of the kind of the indoctrination of the youth.
Yeah.
And so we did film a few high school students that would lead kind of like rallies and kind of organize like these flash mobs. And as we were filming them, it seemed that the reason that they were doing these things were not actually because they believed in doing them.
They just want to go to a good university.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It looks good on the essay.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Did you see like our assembly or?
No. But like that's a common thing to do for Korean high school students. Oh, I love Tokto is
well, exactly.
Korea.
And so, but then that wasn't really interesting for the film, not interesting for the film. It could have been a different film, but
yeah,
with the two storylines that we kept or selected, they just seemed so much more genuine.
Yeah,
and then when you put something like that next to it, it just it really fell flat.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I think that's kind of how the story developed, and you know, we decided to go with these two stories where there's, you know, genuine pain there, and there's real connections, real like human moments in it too. And so I think that really kind of changed my perception. And I think also I felt much more empathy when I very much feel for Mr. No, and I see the pain in his eyes when he's protesting and, you know, hearing him talk about his father. And the same thing for Mrs. Choi. I mean, her story just on such a universal level that she wants to go home. You know, she wants to go back to where she grew up and just have her father recognized. And so I think those are just, you know, these very universal stories that, you know, a lot of people can connect to.
I cried a bit at the end.
Did you?
I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Watch out, guys. The ending is pretty emotional. Since you say this is an observational documentary and you fly, like you go on the fly with these filming things. At that last scene, did you like think, okay, this is the end to this film?
So the last scene on
Dokdo.
I don't know if I want to
Never mind then.
I will say that I didn't film that. That was given to me by Mrs. Choi.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And when she gave that to me and we actually cut it in, I cried as well. Like the first time I saw that in the cut. Yeah.
It was very well filmed.
It was, yeah.
She filmed it?
No, I think they had a crew.
Oh, they had a crew.
And we took like the best pieces of that.
Okay.
And I think just with like the music and everything, it really works well.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. So the movie is Land of My Father. It comes out probably next year.
Yes. Yeah, we're hoping to premiere. Likely it'll be premiering in the United States first at film festivals. Ideally, we would have loved to premiere in Korea first, but we're waiting to premiere either at the Jeonju Film Festival or the DMZ Film Festival. Ideally, we'd be honored to, you know, play at either of those here. But yeah, definitely in 2020, we'll be playing in Korea.
Right. Yeah, definitely go check it out once it comes out. One of the goals of this show is actually to show people that work in different fields of life and inspire our viewers. As well as myself in trying out new things. And personally, like, I'm really, really into documentaries, and I would like to film and direct my own full feature documentary one day. How do you get started?
Well, I mean, I think you have to have a good idea, and I think really the most important thing is that you just get out there and do it. And
that's what everybody says.
You're right. I mean, it's challenging, but it's really fulfilling too. I mean,
My question would be more like, so does your process require like the thing that's really stopping me from documenting everything? I mean, making a documentary is how much pre-production is required for a documentary? Do I just film a lot and then figure it out, or do I actually have an idea of how the story is going to go? And then selectively film or try to like direct the story in that way.
Sure. There's more than one road to Damascus, right? There are many ways you can tell a documentary story.
Right.
You could do a documentary where, you know, it'd be like in a studio like this where you have interviews and you're building a story around those interviews. You know, you could have a documentary where there's narration that's telling a story. The style that I do is observational, so you're following like an event that's happening in real time, and then you're cutting together hours and hours and hours of footage.
Right.
And so I think it just depends. For the style of documentary that I do, you want to be as prepared as you possibly can be. You know, do as much research on your subjects as you can. You know, understand what the narratives might be, but then you also have to be able to go with the flow. And if things change, you have to be okay with that, and you have to try to find
that's the most difficult
where the story's going. Yeah, because if you fight that, and you want to stick to this narrative that you've preconceived, it's just not going to work, right? But most of the time, I mean, that's the beauty of it is that the best stories are the ones that you're never going to think of.
Right.
I mean, that's why you do documentary film is the way things unfold are always you can find beauty and sadness and happiness and all these incredible stories and uh-huh. things that are going around you every day.
How did you first, what was your first documentary film like?
My first documentary film, I went to Emerson College in Boston, uh-huh. and I did a documentary degree there. And the first film I made was about a tattoo studio uh-huh. in Medford, Massachusetts. Uh-huh. And at the time, tattoo studios had only been legal in Boston for, it was something like 5 years or something crazy, where there were these really antiquated kind of Puritan laws in Massachusetts. Yeah. And so we were just doing a short on this documentary artist who is trying to find kind of legitimacy as an artist in a kind of an area where there had been such long-held stigmas, you know, towards tattoos.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, were you happy with the result when you first?
I was so happy with the results. I mean, when I look back at it,
like what was? Did you stumble like along the way?
Not a good film. But when I look back at it now, I still enjoy it because it reminds me of a time in my life, and it reminds me of a time in you know, my experience as a documentary filmmaker where I can look back at that and enjoy and see how I've learned so much since then. So
So I should just go out and start filming.
Yeah. I think, you know, find it a subject that you want to explore, and if you have the time. And I think that is something that you just have to, it is a, I mean, I've been working on this film now for nearly six years.
So do you have like simultaneous, like do you have multiple projects going on simultaneously? Usually?
I do.
Like,
usually I do. Yeah.
So like you have a few films that you're making simultaneously.
I'll usually have, I work as a cinematographer too. So I shoot other people's films. So I'll usually be working on a few other people's films. And then I also do kind of client work. So I'll do,
gotta,
you know,
make
like
some dough.
promotional stuff, commercial stuff. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's
right.
You know, the film Land of My Father, it's been grant funded through the Austin Film Society.
Wow.
The City of Austin Cultural Arts Grants.
Wow.
We did
nice
some crowdfunding.
City.
Yeah, no, Austin. I love Austin. Nice. There's a lot of good support for filmmakers there. And it was supported with some grant money from the University of Texas when I was a graduate student there too. But you know, I've spent a lot of time. I've put my own money into the film, and likely, you know, it won't make a ton of money. I mean, hopefully it does, but it's fine because, you know, I'm able to, you know, make a living doing these other jobs. And I'm able to spend time on something, you know, I deeply care about, like this film.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to start filming now.
That's good.
Documentary. For me, like, I think the biggest hurdle for me, it's probably like logistics. I know like this is probably a shitty excuse, but like, you know, it's I can't afford a crew, obviously. Well, I could, but I don't want to like start with like a huge project.
Sure.
And there's so many like you filmed a film in here, so you probably know, but there's a lot of paperwork that goes into like, say, trying to get one drone shot or trying to like interview some random person off the street and stuff like that. Like, how did you deal with that? I guess your producer did mostly, right?
Yeah, the producer mainly dealt with that.
I need a producer then.
Yeah, well, you should definitely get a producer. I think that's a lot to take on if you're going to try to direct
and
produce.
Right.
Yeah.
But like the logistical issues are probably like the biggest hurdle, but probably an excuse. I'm running out of ideas. Do you have anything good to talk about?
Can I plug my website?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Let's plug your website. What is your website?
Landofmyfather.com.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Landofmyfather.com.
Yeah,
everybody,
so if
go
anyone's
check out the website.
On, yeah, updates on the film or when it's going to come out in Korea, you can check that out there.
Okay, once it's out, will we be able to view it on streaming sites?
Eventually.
Are you planning to do that?
Yeah, eventually. So it works that we have to have like a world premiere at a festival,
obviously.
Then you're able to do that afterwards.
So you do have plans for mass distribution?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody go look forward to Land of My Father. And thank you again, Matt, for coming all the way here. Where did you come from?
Minneapolis is where I flew from originally.
Right today.
I came from Jeonju today, but I'm staying near Hansungdae Hakyo.
That's still very far.
It was a few subway stops.
Well, thank you very much for coming all the way across the city to meet me and talk to me on this humble show.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you guys next time. Follow landofmyfather.com for more updates. And bye-bye. Bye-bye.